bigger and stupider labors every time.
You could always release me early.
No, no. I've got one.
I swear, if you send me back to Thrace or Amazonia...
Don't worry. This is in the opposite direction. I've heard rumors of a monstrous man named Geryon who lives far to the west in Iberia.
Hercules stared. You're kidding, right?
Today, Iberia is what we call Spain and Portugal. To the Greeks, it was the end of the known world. It was like Nebraska or Saskatchewan. You heard about it occasionally, but you couldn't believe actual people live there. Beyond Iberia, as far as the Greeks knew, there was nothing except endless, monster-infested ocean. This man Geryon, continued the king, supposedly he has a herd of bright red cattle. Can you imagine? I wonder if they give strawberry milk. At any rate, I want you to bring me his herd.
What is it with you and cows? Hercules asked.
Just do it.
Hercules hired another ship with a different group of volunteers. Funny thing, except for Iolaus, no one from his last trip wanted to travel with him again. He set sail for the end of the world to find strawberry-flavored cows. Back then, sailing the length of the Mediterranean was a dangerous business. Hercules' ship followed the coast of Africa, since that seemed like the best way not to get lost. Along the way, he killed a bunch of evil kings and monsters, blah blah blah. When he got up to around Tunisia, he ran into this big, ugly son of Poseidon named Antaeus, who is definitely not on my family Christmas card list. Antaeus's mom was Gaia, the goddess of the earth. Don't ask me why or how Poseidon and Gaia had a kid. It's too horrible to contemplate. All I know, Antaeus took after his mom. He was bloodthirsty, evil, and really big. Anybody who passed through Antaeus's territory was forced to wrestle with him to the death. I guess because there was nothing entertaining to watch on Tunisian TV. Hercules could have just sailed past this confrontation, but he didn't like leaving bloodthirsty murderers for other people to deal with. He landed and challenged Antaeus to a match.
Roar!
Antaeus pounded his fists on his chest.
You cannot defeat me. As long as I touch the earth, I will be instantly healed of all my wounds. Pro tip, said Hercules. Don't start a battle by announcing your fatal weakness. How is that a weakness?
Hercules charged. He wrapped his arms around Antaeus's waist and lifted the wrestler so that no part of him touched the ground. Antaeus struggled, kicking and pummeling, but Hercules just squeezed until something inside Antaeus's chest snapped. Antaeus went limp. Hercules waited to be sure he was really dead, then dropped the body on the ground.
Stupid wrestler.
Hercules spit in the dust and went back to his ship. Finally, he reached the end of the Mediterranean, where the northern tip of Africa almost touched the southern tip of Iberia. To honor his incredibly ridiculous quest, Hercules constructed two pillars like a gateway. He called them, you guessed it, the Pillars of Hercules. Some stories claim that Hercules created the gap between Europe and Africa by pushing the continents apart. Other stories say he narrowed the passage so the biggest sea monsters couldn't get into the Mediterranean from the Atlantic Ocean. Believe what you want. Me? I'm not anxious to visit the Pillars of Hercules again. Last time I was there, I almost got decapitated by a flying pineapple. But that's another story. Having arrived in Iberia, Hercules left his men aboard the ship and roamed alone for months, searching for red cows. One hot afternoon, he looked down from a hilltop and saw a herd of ruby-colored animals in the valley below.
That's got to be them, Hercules mumbled. Please let that be them.
He jogged into the valley, tired and irritated. He was almost to the cattle when a ferocious two-headed dog bounded out of the tall grass, snarling and baring its matching sets of fangs. Hercules usually liked dogs, but this two-headed one did not seem friendly, nor was it wearing any rabies tags.
"Whoa, boy. Boys, no need for violence here." "I'll be the judge of that."
A big dude with an axe came lumbering after the dog.
"Are you Garion?" Hercules asked.
"No, I work for Garion," said the axe man. "My name's Eurydion, and this here is my dog Orthos."
"Okay."
Hercules raised his palms and tried to look friendly, which wasn't easy for him, what with the arsenal of weapons and the lion head hood.
"I've come to bargain for these red cattle. High King Muffintop of Mycenae wants them."
"I'm afraid that's impossible," said Eurydion. "My master left me strict orders. All trespassers are to be killed on sight. You've come a long way to die."
"Bummer," said Hercules.
The rancher and his dog attacked at the same time. They also died at the same time. Hercules took them out with one swing. He was wiping the blood off his club when another voice shouted,
"No, no, no!"
The hero looked up. Scuttling toward him was a guy who looked like he'd been run over by a cartoon steamroller. His legs were normal, his head was normal, everything in the middle was flattened and wrong. His neck was anchored to broad shoulders that spread into three separate chests side by side. Each one was clad in a different color shirt, red, green, yellow. His arms stuck out from the left and right chests, which must have made it impossible for him to button his middle shirt. Three separate bellies were fused into one oversized waist that looked like it took a size 82 belt. Two swords hung at his sides.
"What happened to you?"
Hercules asked, genuinely concerned.
"What happened?"
The guy looked confused, then outraged.
"You mean my body? I was born this way, you insensitive moron! Why did you kill my rancher and his dog?"
"They started it."
"Ah! Do you know how hard it is to find good help in Iberia?"
"You're Garion?"
"Of course I'm Garion, Lord of Iberia, son of Chrysaor the Golden, Master of the Red Cows."
"That's an awe-inspiring title," Hercules said. "Master of the Red Cows. Speaking of which, I want to buy them. How much?"
Garion snarled.
"You will pay all right. You will pay in blood."
The Red Cowmaster drew his swords and attacked. Hercules was reluctant to attack a person with three body syndrome, but he smashed his club into Garion's middle chest. His ribs broke with a nasty crunch. That should have killed him, but Garion's chest just popped back into place.
"You can't kill me," he said. "I have three sets of organs. I heal much too quickly."
"BTW," said Hercules, "you shouldn't tell people your fatal weakness."
"How is that a fatal weakness?"
"I just have to kill all three of your bodies at once, right?"
Garion hesitated.
"Curses! I hate heroes!"
He screamed and charged, his swords waving on either side so he looked like an Alaskan king crab samurai. Hercules dropped his club and drew his bow. Garion had absolutely no turning ability. As he barreled forward, Hercules skirted to one side and fired an arrow under the rancher's left arm. The arrow passed through all three chests, piercing his hearts, and Garion fell dead.
"Sorry, dude," said Hercules. "I told you so."
He herded the red cows back to his ship and sailed for home. This time he followed the northern coast along what is now Spain and France and Italy. He had more adventures. In the Alps, he killed some people who tried to steal his cows. Near the spot where Rome would one day be founded, he slew a fire-breathing giant named Cacus. He founded a few cities, destroyed a few nations, blah, blah, blah. At long last, he returned to Tiryns. Eurystheus was disappointed to find that the red cattle did not give strawberry milk, but he gave Hercules credit for completing the task.
"That's 10 jobs done," said the High King, "which means you only have your 2 bonus labors left."
"Bonus labors?"
"First," said the king, "I have a hankering for apples. You've brought me all these fine meat products, crab, wild boar, cow, bird."
"You weren't supposed to eat the Stymphalian birds."
"My doctor says I need more fruits and vegetables in my diet. I want you to find the Garden of Hesperides. Bring me some golden apples from the sacred apple tree of Hera."
"Hera," repeated Hercules, "the goddess who hates me more than anyone in the world. You want me to steal her apples?"
"Yes."
Hercules' lion-skin cape felt warmer than usual. Sweat trickled down his neck.
"And this garden is where, exactly?"
"I have no idea. I hear it's far to the west."
"I was just in the west. I was as far to the west as you can go."
"The Hesperides are the daughters of the Titan Atlas," Eurystheus said helpfully. "Perhaps you could ask Atlas where to find the garden."
"And where do I find Atlas?"
"I guess you'll have to ask someone who knows about Titans. Happy hunting!"
Hercules had no idea how to find Atlas. The Titan didn't have a Facebook profile, and there was nothing on Wikipedia. Even Hercules' dependable nephew Iolaus was stumped. Ultimately, Hercules consulted with a priest of Zeus, hoping for some pointers.
"If you need to find a Titan," said the priest, "perhaps you should ask another Titan."
Hercules scratched his beard.
"Do you have one in mind? Because I thought most of the Titans got thrown into Tartarus."
"There is one Titan who might help," said the priest. "He's always been friendly to humankind. He's also conveniently chained to a mountain, which makes him easy to find."
"You're talking about Prometheus, the Titan who gave people fire."
"Give this man a cookie," said the priest.
"You have cookies?" Hercules asked hopefully.
"No, that's just an expression. Prometheus is your best bet, however. You'll find him in the Caucasus Mountains. I'll draw you a map."
Naturally, the Caucasus Mountains were a zillion miles away. After months of travel and lots of adventures, Hercules finally found Prometheus, a 10-foot-tall man dressed in grimy rags, chained to the side of a cliff by his ankles and wrists. His face was scarred from old claw marks, but the real horror show was his belly.
Gross out alert!
Sitting on Prometheus' ribcage was a huge golden eagle, ripping through the Titan's immortal guts and eating the tasty bits. You know those cheap haunted houses that make fake guts out of cold spaghetti, peeled grapes, and tomato sauce? It looked like that, only it wasn't fake. Hercules walked up to Prometheus.
"Man, that looks painful."
"It is."
Prometheus let loose a scream, shaking the entire mountain.
"Sorry, hard to concentrate."
Hercules sympathized. He'd had plenty of days when he felt like he was being pecked to death.
"I hate to ask, but I'm looking for Atlas. I need some golden apples from the Garden of the Hesperides."
"I could help,"
Prometheus said, sweat pouring down his face.
"But this eagle..."
Hercules nodded.
"How long have you been chained here? 1,000 years?
"Something ouch like that."
"If I kill the eagle, will you tell me what I need to know?"
"Gladly. Oh, yes."
Hercules looked at the sky.
"Father Zeus,
I haven't ever asked you for anything. During all these stupid jobs for Eurystheus, I've paid my dues and suffered in silence. Well, mostly. Anyway, Prometheus has information I need. I judge that he has been punished sufficiently. I'm going to kill this eagle now, which normally I wouldn't do because eagles are cool. But this one is creeping me out. A regal voice echoed from the heavens.
All righty then.
Confident that he had Dad's permission, Hercules drew his bow and shot the eagle. Immediately, Prometheus's belly closed up. Relief washed over his face.
Thank you, my friend. You are a noble cockroach.
What now?
Sorry, I meant human. Anyway, here's what you need to do. Go northwest, past the land of the Hyperboreans, to the very edge of the known world.
Been there, killed stuff, got the t-shirt.
Ah, but Atlas dwells on a mountain that cannot be found by humans, unless they know exactly where to look. I will give you directions. Once you are there, you will see the Garden of the Hesperides very close by, but you must not try to get the apples yourself. The dragon Laden guards the tree, and he cannot be killed, even by someone as strong as you. Besides, if you took the apples by force, Hera would be within her rights to smite you dead on the spot.
So
you have to persuade Atlas to fetch the apples for you. The Hesperides are his daughters. He can visit the garden easily. The dragon will not bother him.
But isn't Atlas stuck holding up the sky?
Prometheus smiled.
Well, I can't solve all your problems. You'll have to figure out that part yourself.
Once he had directions, Hercules thanked the grungy Titan and went on his way. He had a lot of time on the road to think, so when he finally found Atlas, he had a pretty good idea of what to say. The old Titan general crouched on a mountaintop in the dark reaches of the northern wastelands. Atlas still wore his battle-scarred, lightning-melted armor from the war with the gods 1,000 years before. His skin was as dark as old pennies from being out in the elements so long. He knelt with his arms raised, and propped on his back was the base of an enormous swirling funnel cloud, a tornado that took up the entire sky. Probably because it was the sky.
Great Atlas!
Hercules called. He wasn't just throwing out compliments. Atlas was twice the size of Prometheus and twice as buff. Even after a millennium of brutal punishment, he looked impressive.
What do you want, puny mortal?
The Titan's voice boomed.
Apples,
said Hercules. Atlas grunted.
I suppose you mean the apples from my daughter's garden.
The Titan pointed with his chin. Hercules hadn't noticed before, but down the other side of the mountain, in a valley about a mile away, a beautiful garden glowed with reddish-purple light like a perpetual sunset. Tiny figures, women in white, danced among the flowers. At the center of the garden, a huge apple tree reached toward the sky. Even from this distance, Hercules could see golden fruit glinting in its branches and the serpentine form of Laden the dragon twisting around its trunk. Hercules was tempted to march down there, kill the dragon, and take the apples himself. It seemed so simple. But he figured Prometheus hadn't been lying to him. Even if he could kill the dragon, Hera would blast him to dust the moment he plucked the fruit.
Yeah, Hercules agreed. Those apples. You'll never get them yourself. Prometheus told me.
Atlas knit his sweaty eyebrows.
You know Prometheus? I shot the eagle that was feeding on his liver. He gave me directions to find you. Well, you're a regular Titan fanboy, aren't you? Tell you what, since you helped Prometheus, I'll help you. But it won't be easy.
You'll have to hold the sky for me while I fetch the apples.
Hercules had been anticipating this. Fine, but you'll have to swear on the river Styx that you'll come back. Atlas chuckled.
Don't trust me, eh? I can't blame you. All right, I swear on the river Styx that I will come back here with the apples. But are you sure you can hold the weight of the sky? You're pretty small.
Pfft. Hercules untied his lionskin cape and tossed it aside.
Hand it over.
You're probably thinking, dude, it's the sky. How can you hold it, much less hand it over? And if it was so heavy and painful, why didn't Atlas just drop it and walk away? It doesn't work that way. Take it from me. If Atlas had dropped the sky and tried to run, it would have crashed down and flattened everything in sight, including the Titan and his daughters. As for how you can hold it, well, unless you've done it, it's hard to describe. Imagine a 40-million-ton top spinning on your back, its sharp point digging in between your shoulder blades. It pretty much sucks, but you have to bear the weight as best you can or you'll get crushed. Hercules knelt next to Atlas. Slowly and carefully, Atlas shifted the load from his shoulders to Hercules's. The hero was small, but he didn't collapse under the burden.
I'm impressed, Atlas said.
Just get the apples, Hercules grunted. This is heavy.
Atlas chuckled.
Don't I know it. Back in a jiffy.
Atlas's idea of a jiffy was not the same as Hercules's. The Titan ambled down to the Garden of the Hesperides, had a nice long chat with his daughters, enjoyed a leisurely picnic, spent some time petting Leighton the dragon, then finally gathered an armload of apples. Meanwhile, Hercules' muscles were turning to putty. His limbs shook. Sweat trickled into his eyes. The sky churned, digging into his back so hard, it was going to leave a nasty bruise. Hercules had never felt so weak. He wasn't sure he could hold out. At long last, Atlas returned, whistling.
Thank you, my friend. I've forgotten how good it feels to be free.
Great. Now take back the sky.
Well, here's the thing. I swore to come back with the apples, which I did. I never promised to take the sky and let you go.
Hercules muttered some unprintable curses.
Now, Atlas said. Let's not be rude. You're doing great. I'm just going to take my daughters, gather an army, and go destroy Mount Olympus.
All right, Hercules said. You win.
Yes, I do. Do.
But one last favor before you go, please. I helped Prometheus bear his punishment. The least you can do is give me a little more comfort to bear yours.
Atlas hesitated.
What did you have in mind?
That pointy bit on the sky is killing my back.
I hear you, buddy.
I really need a pillow.
I know. I begged the gods for a king-size one with extra filling. They wouldn't listen.
Well, then, here's your chance to prove you're more merciful than the gods. Take the sky again for a second. Let me fold my lion-skin cloak and put it behind my neck. Then I'll take this guy from you forever. I promise.
Atlas should have just laughed and walked away. But the Titan general wasn't completely heartless. He didn't hate mortals like Hercules. He only hated the gods. Maybe he also felt a teensy bit guilty for inflicting his punishment on a puny demigod. Or maybe he just liked the idea of appearing more generous than Zeus.
"All right," he said. "I am way too nice for my own good."
"You're the best,"
Hercules agreed. Atlas set down the golden apples. He knelt next to the demigod, and Hercules shifted the weight of the sky back onto the Titan's shoulders. Hercules hobbled over to the golden apples. He gathered them up in his lion-skin cape.
"Thanks, Atlas.
See you."
"What?"
Atlas bellowed.
"You promised."
"I didn't promise on the River Styx. Come on, dude. That's trickery 101. Have fun holding the sky. Forever."
Hercules could still hear Atlas bellowing curses when he was 500 miles away. Time for the last stupid deed. Are you excited? Hercules was. He was ready to be done with this nonsense. So was the poor schmuck who was writing it all down. Oh, wait, that's me. When Hercules got back to Tiryns with the golden apples, High King Eurystheus was pale, sweaty, and sleep-deprived. For weeks he'd been worrying about what would happen when Hercules completed his final task. Once he was free, there would be nothing to stop him from throwing Eurystheus into the nearest trash chute and taking over as High King. The whole kingdom would go to the dogs. Eurystheus had one last chance. He needed a completely impossible task to make sure Hercules died in disgrace and never returned. A crazy idea came to him.
Death. Never return. Go to the dogs.
Last quest, the king announced. Travel to the underworld and bring me back Hades' guard dog Cerberus.
Very funny, Hercules said. What's my task, really?
That is your task. And don't come back with some generic three-headed dog. I want the real thing, Cerberus himself. Fetch!
That last part was just mean. But Hercules wasn't going to lose his cool so close to the finish line. He turned on his heel and marched out. First, he visited the Temple of Hades in Eleusis to get some advice about the underworld. Then, he visited the doggy discount store and stocked up on bacon-flavored munchie bones. According to some stories, he also took some time off and went sailing with Jason and the Argonauts. I can't blame him. Compared to invading the underworld, a dangerous sea voyage probably sounded like a relaxing vacation. Finally, Hercules steeled his nerves, found the nearest fissure in the earth, and climbed down to Erebus. Getting across the River Styx turned out to be no problem. The ferryman Charon was a huge fan. He agreed to take the hero across in exchange for Hercules recording a voicemail greeting on his iPhone. Hercules arrived at the Black Gates and found Cerberus. He was kind of hard to miss, being a massive black three-headed hell beast with a snake for a tail and glowing red eyes. Hercules had a way with dogs. He told Cerberus to sit. Cerberus sat. Hercules pulled out some bacon-flavored munchie bones and threw one to each of Cerberus's heads. Cerberus went bonkers for that stuff. Hercules could have just picked him up and walked away with him, but he wanted to do things politely, if possible. He decided to ask permission from Hades. He knew that was a risk, but he also knew it was winter time, which meant that Persephone would be in the underworld. As the daughter of Zeus, Persephone was technically Hercules's half-sister, so she might cut him some slack. He figured it was worth a try.
"I'll be back, boy," he told Cerberus. "Don't go anywhere."
Cerberus thumped his snaky tail against the ground, which gave the snake a headache.
As Hercules traveled through the fields of Asphodel, he happened to stumble across Theseus, the hero of Athens, who was sitting on a rock, paralyzed from the neck down. He hadn't been able to move in years.
"Help," said Theseus.
Hercules frowned.
"You're Theseus, aren't you? What are you doing here?" "Long story. A friend of mine had this stupid idea to kidnap Persephone, and I went along with it. My friend, well, he turned into stone and crumbled. I'm still stuck. Can you get me out of here?"
Hercules tried to pull him up, but Theseus's butt seemed grafted to the rock.
Let me talk to Hades and Persephone, see what I can do." "Thanks, man. I'm not going anywhere."
Hercules ambled into the palace of Hades and found the king and queen of the dead playing hungry, hungry hippos on a small table between their thrones.
"Am I interrupting?" Hercules asked.
Hades threw his hands in the air.
"No, she's killing me at this game."
"It's all in the wrists, my dear."
Hades faced Hercules.
"You're not dead. You're also not bringing my afternoon tea cart. Who are you?"
"I'm Hercules, my lord. I'm here because High King Milktoast up in Mycenae wants me to bring him your dog, Cerberus."
A smile tugged at the corner of Hades' mouth.
"Wow, that's funny. I almost laughed."
"I wish it was a joke," Hercules said. "Unfortunately, I have these 12 stupid tasks."
"Oh, we know all about them," said Hades. "My wife here loves your work."
Persephone beamed.
"I've been following you since the early days. I adored the way you cut off the minions' hands and ears and noses."
Hercules had to think about it, because that was like 50 pages ago.
"Yeah, I did that, didn't I?"
"And the Hydra? That was thrilling. We were watching your fight on the Near Death Channel."
"The Near Death Channel?"
"We were afraid your soul would be paying us a visit, but you survived. I am proud to call you my brother."
Hades leaned forward conspiratorially.
"You're all she talks about these days. You know Hercules? Well, I'm his sister."
Persephone swatted her husband's arm.
"At any rate, we'd be happy to lend you Cerberus, wouldn't we, dear?"
Hades shrugged.
"Sure. Just release him when you're done. He knows the way home."
"That's really cool of you," Hercules said. "Oh, by the way, there's another hero, Theseus, stuck in Asphodel. Would it be okay to let him go now? He's bored."
Hades scratched his forehead.
"Theseus is still here? Yeah, sure, take him."
And so, after signing some autographs and diplomatically letting Hades win a game of Hungry Hungry Hippos, Hercules walked back through the fields of Asphodel, freed Theseus, and returned to the gates of the underworld to pick up Cerberus.
"Heel boy."
The dog could smell munchy bones in Hercules' pockets, so he wagged his snaky tail and followed. When they got to the upper world, Hercules and Theseus parted ways with a handshake. Hercules warned him to be careful, but Theseus was so ADHD, he didn't pay much attention. He was already distracted by how shiny the mortal world was, and he was anxious to get back to Athens. Hercules faced Cerberus, who was squinting in the sunlight and growling at the trees.
"Okay, buddy," Hercules said. "I'm going to pick you up and carry you, just for the sake of appearances. You growl and thrash and act like I dragged you here. Someday, artists are going to make a bunch of pottery pictures about us, and it'll look stupid if you're wagging your tail and begging for munchy bones."
Cerberus seemed to understand. Hercules picked him up and hauled him to Tiryns. Cerberus howled and thrashed like a champ. When they got to the city, everybody cleared out of their way. People locked their doors and hid under their beds. Guards dropped their weapons and ran. Hercules burst into the throne room.
"Eurystheus, play dead!"
The High King screamed and dove into his bronze pot. Hercules grinned. He'd been hoping for one more pot dive.
"Take it away," the king yelled. "Take that hell beast away."
"You sure? You don't want to check his teeth or read his dog tag or anything?"
"No, I believe you.
Your tasks are finished. You are released from my service. Go in peace, please.
Hercules wasn't sure how to feel about that. He'd been working for the king for more than 8 years now. He'd traveled the whole world several times over. For a long time, he'd fantasized about killing Eurystheus once his labors were done, but now, looking at the trembling bronze pot next to the throne, he just felt pity and relief, along with something else he hadn't felt in a long time, happiness. He turned to Cerberus.
Go home, buddy. Here, take my last munchy bones.
Cerberus licked Hercules' face with three slobbery tongues, then bounded out of the throne room. Hercules turned to the pot.
Thank you, Eurystheus. You've helped me atone for my family's deaths. You've tested me in ways I could never have imagined. More than that, you've shown me that I would never want your job. Being the High King isn't for me. You can keep your throne. I'm much happier being a hero.
He strode out of the palace without looking back.
Happy ending?
Gods, you would hope so after all that, right?
But nope.
Hercules decided he wanted to get married again and settle down. He heard about this out-of-the-way little city called Aecalia, ruled by a king named Eurytus. Of course the guy's name was Eurytus. That's not confusing at all after Eurytion the Rancher and Eurystheus the High King and Yuri the Russian Bear, or whoever else was in this story. Anyway, King Eurytus was having an archery contest. The grand prize was his daughter Iole, who was very beautiful. Nice dad, right?
Oh, honey, you don't mind if I give you away in my archery contest, do you? It'll be good advertising for the kingdom. Great, thanks.
Hercules came to town and easily won the contest, but Eurytus refused to hand over his daughter.
Look, Hercules, said the king, nothing personal, but you murdered your last wife and your kids. This is my daughter. I can't give her to someone like you.
Really touching how Eurytus developed a conscience after deciding to give away his daughter as a contest prize, but whatever. Hercules might have killed the king, but he was too much in shock. He'd seen Iole. She was really hot. He'd already imagined their beautiful new life together.
You're going back on your word? He asked Eurytus. You'll regret this.
He stormed out of town. A few weeks later, all of Eurytus's cattle turned up missing. Of course, the king suspected Hercules.
That scoundrel! I'll march against his hometown and destroy it.
His son Iphitus, who was the only one in the family with any sense, raised his hand.
Dad, I don't think Hercules did this. I told you to honor your promise and give him Iole. I think the missing cattle is just a punishment from the gods.
Lies,
screamed the king.
War.
Well, the other thing,
Iphitus said,
Hercules is living in Tiryns with his cousin, the High King of Mycenae. Their kingdom is like 20 times more powerful than ours, so war would be suicide.
Oh.
The king hated getting a reality check.
Well, what would you suggest?
Let me go talk to Hercules, said Iphitus. I'll clear this up. But if it turns out he didn't take the cattle, you really should give him Iole.
The king agreed. Iphitus traveled to see Hercules. The prince tried to be as diplomatic as possible.
Listen, man, I'm on your side. I know you didn't take my dad's cattle. I'm just trying to prove it so we can clear your name.
Clear your name?
Hercules fumed. He felt ashamed of being disqualified in the archery competition, and he also felt cheated. He'd spent 8 years paying his dues, doing stupid labors to clear his name, and as soon as he tried to make a new life for himself, his old crimes got thrown in his face again.
Come with me, Hercules growled.
He took Iphitus to the top of the city wall and showed him the view.
You can see the entire countryside from here. Do you spy your cows anywhere?
Iphitus shook his head.
No, they're not here.
Well, there you go. Goodbye. Hercules pushed Iphitus off the wall. The young prince fell to his death, screaming some very undiplomatic things on his way down. Another bad move for Hercules. But what can I say? There's his famous anger problem again. The next day, the gods inflicted him with a terrible disease as punishment. He developed a fever. He lost weight. His skin broke out in itchy running sores, and every whitehead zit in the universe migrated to his nose. Oh, great. Shivering and nauseous, Hercules pulled his lion skin cloak around him and stumbled out of town, heading for the Oracle of Delphi. The Pythian priestess wasn't excited to see him again. She subtly opened her purse so she could get at her pepper spray in case things escalated.
"I'm sorry," Hercules said. "I pushed an innocent guy off the city wall, and now I've got zits. What do I have to do to get free of this sickness? Another 12 labors?"
"Well, that's the good news," the oracle said nervously. "No more labors. To atone for your sin, all you have to do is sell yourself into slavery for 3 years. Give the proceeds of the sale to Iphitus's family as compensation."
Things escalated. Hercules went crazy and started tearing up the shrine. He chased the oracle around the room, trying to hit her with her own three-legged stool. The priestess screamed and sprayed her pepper spray. Apollo came down from Mount Olympus and got into it. He and Hercules were punching each other, throwing each other onto the floor, shooting each other in the butt with arrows. The whole scene was like a daytime talk show brawl. Finally, Zeus put a stop to it. A lightning bolt angled into the cave and hit the floor between Hercules and Apollo, blasting them apart.
"Enough," boomed the voice of Zeus. "Apollo, chill. Hercules, respect the oracle."
Hercules calmed down. Reluctantly, he and Apollo shook hands. Hercules cleaned up Delphi, then agreed to be sold into slavery. Hermes, the god of commerce, conducted the auction. The winning bidder was a queen named Omphale, who ruled the kingdom of Lydia over in Asia Minor. Since female rulers were rare back then, Omphale was glad to have an enforcer like Hercules to make sure people obeyed her. Hercules ran a lot of errands for her, the usual wars, monster cleanups, pizza deliveries, and assassinations. One of the most famous incidents, these two crazy dwarf twins called the Kirkopes, Acmon and Paselos, were causing all sorts of havoc in the kingdom. They robbed merchants, stole stuff from convenience stores, and played practical jokes, like changing the highway signs or replacing the army's weapons with Nerf spears. Basically, they were a Category 5 nuisance, so Omphale sent Hercules after them. Hercules found them easily enough, but they were hard to catch. The little guys were as slippery as otters, and their teeth were just as sharp. Eventually, Hercules succeeded in tying both of them up.
"Let us go," yelled Acmon. "We'll give you shiny presents."
"Shut up," grumbled Hercules.
"We will tell you jokes,"
offered Paselos.
"You're going to the queen," Hercules said. "She doesn't have a sense of humor."
He attached the Kirkopes to the end of a stick, hanging upside down from their ankles, then slung them over his shoulder like a hobo's bag. He set off down the road, and the Kirkopes immediately busted out laughing.
"Black Bottom," said Acmon. "Oh, gods! Ha 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 ha! It all makes sense,"
cried Paselos.
"Mother was right! Ha 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 ha!"
Hercules stopped. "What are you two idiots laughing about?" The dwarf twins pointed at Hercules' rear end. His tunic was riding up on his sword belt, and since Greeks didn't wear underwear, Hercules was walking around with his buns on full display.
You're so tan, you have a black bottom!
Ackman cried with delight. Hercules scowled. You're laughing at my butt?
Yes!
Paselos had tears in his eyes.
Years ago, our mother warned us of a prophecy. Beware the black bottom! We didn't know what it meant, but now we do!
Great, Hercules muttered. Now shut up!
Black bottom! Black bottom!
The twins teased him for miles. At first it was annoying, but after a while it was so ridiculous that it became funny to Hercules. At nightfall, he stopped for dinner. As he sat by his campfire, the Kirkopis told him funny stories and stupid jokes until Hercules' sides hurt from laughter.
Why did the Chimera cross the road? How many Spartans does it take to change a light bulb?
The dwarfs knew all the classics.
All right, you two, Hercules said. I'll make you a deal. If you promise never to make trouble in Omphale's kingdom again, I will set you free. You're too amusing to kill.
Hooray!
Said Ackman.
We are amusing! All hail the black bottom!
Cried Paselos. Hercules cut them loose and went on his way. He felt pretty good about it, and then he discovered that the Kirkopis had stolen his sword and all his money. Still, he couldn't help chuckling. The world needed more jokesters. Finally, Hercules finished his years of service to Omphale. She offered to marry him, but he politely declined. It was hard to get past the fact that they'd started their relationship as slave and master. He decided to look elsewhere for a wife. You can probably guess how that worked out. Hercules wandered for quite a while, killing bandits and random monsters until he happened across the city of Caledon. You might remember that place from the Death Pig celebrity hunt. The royal family had had a rough few years. Meleager and most of the other princes were dead, but King Aeneas still had one beautiful daughter named Deianira. She and Hercules fell in love instantly. By the time dessert was served, Hercules had proposed. The whole family was delighted. Sure, Hercules had a bad reputation, but so did the Caledonians.
There's only one problem, said the king. Deianira is already betrothed to the local river god, Achelous. I had to promise him my daughter to keep him from flooding the countryside.
Hercules cracked his knuckles. For the first time in years, he felt like he was taking on a task he really cared about, just because he wanted to.
Leave this river god to me.
He marched down to the riverbanks and called,
Achelous!
The god rose from the water. From the waist down, he had the body of a bull. From the waist up, he had the body of a man with horns jutting from his forehead.
What do you want?
Said Achelous.
To marry Deianira. She's mine. We're going to fight for her. Whoever loses must promise to take no vengeance upon her, her family, or the city. Fine, said Achelous. I am afraid of no mortal. What's your name, anyway?
Hercules.
The river god went pale.
Oh, crud.
Hercules launched himself at the bullman. They thrashed around for hours trying to kill each other, but of course Hercules was stronger. He broke off one of the god's horns, then held him in a chokehold until Achelous relented.
No vengeance, Hercules said. That was the deal.
The river god scowled, rubbing the stump of his broken horn.
Oh, I won't take revenge. I won't need to. Your marriage will end in disaster. Deianira would have been better off with me.
Yeah, whatever.
Hercules walked back to Caledon in triumph. Achelous's broken horn became a cornucopia, capable of spewing forth all kinds of food, drinks, and gluten-free snacks.
Hercules offered it up to the gods in honor of his marriage, and for a few weeks, he and Deianira were deliriously happy, until Hercules messed up again. One night they were having dinner in the Caledonian throne room as usual, when a serving boy accidentally spilled cold water all over Hercules' hands.
Gah!
Without seeing who had made the spill, Hercules lashed out and backhanded the kid across the room, instantly killing him. That put a damper on the evening. Hercules was mortified, especially since the kid was a kinsman of the king. The nobles realized that death wasn't intentional. The boy's father forgave Hercules, but Hercules still felt bad. He decided to leave the city, since exile was the usual punishment for manslaughter. King Aeneas didn't protest very hard. He was getting the sense that Hercules was a walking time bomb. So Hercules and Deianira set off for the city of Trachis. Hercules had heard that the king there was looking for a new general, and it seemed like as good a place as any to make a fresh start. For what, the 20th time? I've lost count. Along the way, they came to a wide river with no easy way across. Hercules and Deianira walked along the bank, looking for a bridge or a shallow place to ford, but they found none.
I can swim across, Hercules offered. You can cling to my neck.
Honey, this is my best dress, said Deianira. Everything I own is in this bag. If we have to swim, a lot of stuff will get ruined.
A voice from the woods said,
I can help.
A centaur stepped forward. He had a friendly smile and a well-groomed beard, which was a good sign in a centaur.
My name is Nessus, he said. I ferry passengers across the river on my back all the time. Just pay me whatever you think is fair. Oh, Hercules, said Deianira. It's perfect.
Hercules wasn't sure. He'd dealt with a lot of centaurs before. Some, like old Pholus, who'd shared his wine, were really nice. Some were not.
You can trust me, Nessus promised. The gods gave me this job because I have such a great reputation. Nothing but 5-star reviews on Yelp. Look me up.
Hercules still felt uneasy, but Deianira pleaded, and the centaur's Yelp reviews sounded pretty impressive.
Fine. Take my wife across first. Be careful. Do a good job, and I'll pay you well.
You got it, boss.
Deianira climbed on the centaur's back, and he forged into the river. Unfortunately, Nessus had been lying about his reputation. His Yelp reviews were more like,
very disappointed. Terrible customer service. I will never use this centaur again.
When he got to the opposite bank, Nessus took off running. Deianira had to hold on tight to avoid falling off and getting hurt.
You're mine now, baby, Nessus yelled. That's a good payday.
Deianira screamed. Across the river, Hercules grabbed his bow. The centaur was just a blur through the trees on the opposite bank. The shot would have been impossible for most heroes. If he missed, Hercules could accidentally hit his wife. Nevertheless, he aimed and let the arrow fly. It hit Nessus right in the chest, piercing his heart. The centaur stumbled and collapsed. Deianira spilled to the ground, somehow managing to avoid breaking her neck. Right in front of her, the centaur gasped, blood pouring down his chest.
Girl, he wheezed, come closer. No thanks, Deianira said. I'm sorry I abducted you. You're so beautiful. Listen, before your husband gets here, I've a gift for you as an apology. Centaur blood is a powerful love potion. Take some of mine. Then, if you are ever worried about your husband leaving you, smear some blood on his clothes. As soon as my blood touches his skin, he will remember his love for you and forget all other women.
You're lying, she said. Nessus opened his mouth, but said nothing. He died with his glassy eyes fixed on hers. Through the woods, Hercules called,
"Deianira!"
Deianira flinched. Quickly, she rummaged through her pack and found an old perfume vial. Careful not to touch any of the centaur's blood, she let some of it trickle into the bottle, then closed the stopper. She shoved the vial back into her bag just as Hercules appeared.
"Are you okay?" he asked.
Yes, thanks.
Stupid centaur. Did he hurt you?
No. Let's forget it. We should get going.
They didn't talk about the centaur incident again. Hercules and Deianira arrived at the city of Trachis, and Hercules got a job as the king's new general. He won a bunch of wars. For a while, once again, life was good. But rumors started to reach Deianira. Rumors that her husband wasn't always faithful when he went out on his military campaigns. Sometimes he would take women as the spoils of war, and he wasn't using them as personal chefs or maids. Deianira began to worry that her husband would leave her. She didn't trust what the centaur Nessus had said, but she was feeling more and more desperate. The final straw? Hercules went to war with the city of Aecalia. That's the place where King Eurytus had held the archery contest in Distum. Hercules still had a lot of hard feelings toward the king, so he was delighted to destroy the city and enslave its people. He took the princess Aeole as his personal servant and shipped her back to Trachis in chains, along with a bunch of other loot. The shipment arrived with a message for Deianira.
"Hi, babe. OMW home with the army. In the meantime, take care of this new girl I captured. When I get back, I'm going to have a big ceremony. Could you make sure my best shirt is clean? XOX Hercules."
When Deianira read this, she freaked out. Hercules' best shirt happened to be his wedding shirt. She knew exactly who Aeole was, the girl Hercules had tried to marry before he married Deianira. Looking at Aeole, who was still young and beautiful, Deianira had no doubt what this ceremony was about. Hercules was planning to divorce her and marry Aeole. In a panic, Deianira rummaged through her stuff for the old vial of Nessus' blood. She dabbed the stuff on the inside of Hercules' wedding shirt. The blood dried and turned invisible immediately.
"There," she told herself, "Hercules will wear this and remember that he loves me."
A few days later, Hercules got home with his army. He put on his wedding shirt, grabbed Aeole, and said,
"Come on, we're going to the temple. Deianira, I'll be home later."
But Hercules wasn't planning a wedding. He just wanted to dedicate his spoils of war to Zeus, including his new slave Aeole. Right in the middle of the ceremony, as he was praying to Zeus, Hercules smelled smoke.
"Uncle!"
shouted Iolaus, who was still serving as Hercules' lieutenant.
"You're smoldering!"
The centaur's blood wasn't a love potion. It was the worst kind of poison in the world, like a combination of cyanide and sulfuric acid. Hercules' skin blistered and cooked. Agony shot through his body. He screamed and tried to pull off the shirt, but it had grafted to his body and the flesh came off with the fabric. "Oops, sorry. Gross out alert."
"I'm dying," Hercules said,
crawling up the steps to the altar.
"Iolaus, please. I need one more favor."
"You can't die,"
Iolaus cried. But Hercules was clearly on his way out. He was racked with pain. He was losing blood. He smelled like microwaved roadkill.
"Please build me a funeral pyre. Let me die with some dignity."
The people wailed and wept because Hercules had won them a lot of battles. At Iolaus' direction, they built a huge pyre, and Hercules climbed to the top under his own power.
"Farewell," he said. "Tell my wife I love her."
The fires were lit, and the greatest of all heroes went up in flames. When Deianira heard the news and realized she had killed her husband, she was so horrified, she hanged herself. Up on Mount Olympus, Zeus looked down at his dying son. He announced to the other gods,
"That's my boy down there. He has done more and suffered more than any other hero. I will make him a god. Any objections?"
He glared at Hera. But the Queen of Heaven said nothing. She had to admit that Hercules had suffered. Everything she'd done to make his life miserable had only made him stronger and more famous. She knew when it was time to quit. Hercules' spirit ascended to Olympus. He became immortal and was given a job as Olympus's gatekeeper. With Hercules serving as the bouncer, uninvited guests were no longer a problem. He married Hebe, the goddess of youth, and finally got some peace and quiet. He was worshipped as a god by the Greeks, the Romans, and the makers of B-movies. As far as I'm concerned, anybody who's managed to read this entire chapter should also be made immortal as a reward for pain and suffering, but the Olympians didn't ask my opinion. The only reward I can offer is moving on to the last hero, a guy I personally like a lot. He shares a name with a buddy of mine. Also, anybody who goes on a dangerous voyage to retrieve a sheepskin rug is okay in my book. Let's take a cruise with Jason. Jason finds a rug that really ties the kingdom together. The story starts in a typical way. Boy meets Cloud. Boy and Cloud have children. Boy divorces Cloud. Boy remarries. Wicked stepmother tries to sacrifice Cloud's kids. Kids get away on magical flying ram. I know, you've heard that one a million times, but bear with me. The boy in question was Athamas. He ruled a city called Boeotia in a part of central Greece known as Thessaly. As a young man, Athamas fell madly in love with a cloud nymph, Nephele, and they got married. Which was good, because folks were starting to wonder why Athamas was walking around under a cloud all day. Once their relationship was out in the open, people could say, "Oh, he's not depressed. That's just his wife." The king and the cloud had two children, a girl named Hela and a boy named Phrixus. Again with the names, you christen your daughter Hela? So if her last name is Smith, people can ask, "Is that Smith?" And you can say, "Oh yeah, that's Hela Smith." The boy's name wasn't much better. Phrixus means curly. At least they didn't call him Mo or Larry. Eventually, Athamas and Nephele got divorced. Maybe the stationary front over Boeotia finally moved on and Nephele had to follow her work elsewhere. Athamas wasted no time in getting a second wife, a mortal princess named Ino. Ino was a real charmer. As soon as Athamas and she had children of their own, Ino decided that Hela and Phrixus needed to die so her own kids could inherit the kingdom. Even in ancient Greece, you needed a good excuse to kill your stepchildren, so Ino invented one. Back in those days, Greek women did most of the farming. That's because the men spent their time killing each other in battle. Since Queen Ino was in charge of the crops, she took all the seeds for that year and secretly roasted them in a big oven, rendering them useless. She distributed the seeds to the Boeotian women and told them to get planting. Surprise, surprise, nothing grew. Harvesting time rolled around, and there were absolutely no crops to bring in. That kind of sucked, since it meant no bread, biscuits, pies, or Oreos for an entire year. "Gosh," Ino said to her husband, "I wonder what happened. We'd better send some messengers to the Oracle of Delphi to find out how we have displeased the gods." Athamas agreed. When the messengers got to Delphi, the oracle told them the truth. "Queen Ino is a lying weasel who's willing to let the whole kingdom starve just so she can get her way." The messengers returned to Boeotia, but but Queen Ino made sure to meet with them first. She bribed them heavily, threatened their families, and reminded them what a terrible place the royal dungeon was. When the messengers appeared before King Athamas, they said what the queen told them to say.
"The gods sure are mad," the lead guy reported. "The oracle said the only way to fix the harvest is to sacrifice your first two children, Hela and Phrixus."
Queen Ino gasped. "What a shame! I'll get the knives." Athamas was devastated, but he knew you couldn't argue with the Delphic oracle. He allowed his children to be taken to the sacrificial altar at the edge of the sea, where Queen Ino was sharpening her 14-piece Ginsu cutlery set. Meanwhile, up in the sky, Nephele heard her children crying for help. Being a cloud, she was a gentle, non-violent type who didn't know much about hostage situations, but she did have a friend who might help, so she called in a favor. For the past 100 years or so, a winged ram with golden fleece had been flying around Greece for no apparent reason. His name was Chrysomelus, and he was the product of a strange date night between a mortal princess named Theophany and my dad Poseidon. I covered that story in Greek Gods, so please don't ask me to explain it again. Frankly, it's embarrassing. Anyway, Chrysomelus zipped around Greece all the time, but spotting him was a rare occurrence, like seeing a shooting star, a double rainbow, or a celebrity in line at the Shake Shack. The Greeks loved Chrysomelus, because, dude, a winged golden ram? They considered him a good omen. Wherever he appeared, the king of that particular city would say,
"You see, I'm doing a good job. Super Sheep has endorsed me."
According to legend, if Chrysomelus stayed in your country for any length of time, your crops would grow faster, people would be cured of all their diseases, and your Wi-Fi signal would improve, like 500%.